Welcome to Hub Headlines. Today's program features the best commentary and analysis published in the Hub for March 19th. Up first is Theo Argyrides writing on why Pierre Poilievre's tough talk leaves corporate Canada in a precarious position.
Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre's invective against lobbyists earlier this month in Vancouver continues to reverberate loudly with Canada's top business executives and the Ottawa consulting ecosystem that serves them. For months, corporate Canada has been closely surveilling Poilievre's messaging to piece together a semblance of what policy would look like under his government, which everyone is assuming is the likely outcome of the next election. The anti-corporatist tendencies were already evident, but the harshness of Poilievre's language in his March 8th speech to the Vancouver Board of Trade was a surprise. As has been widely reported, the Conservative leader called lobbyists utterly useless and boasted about how he avoids talking to big business and prefers spending time with workers. Poilievre believes there's been too much cozying up to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's governing Liberals and his agenda, which he claims has been at the expense of workers. Everyone's trying to make sense of it and wondering what it all means for them, if it means anything at all. The comments are first and foremost political narrative, which is not to suggest they shouldn't be taken at face value or that they do not reflect something substantive or real. It's just to highlight that Poilievre's intended audience is much wider than the small universe of consultants in Ottawa scrambling to figure out how to engage. Attacking lobbyists and corporate welfare is a fan favorite among conservatives and dovetails nicely into Poilievre's anti-elite, anti-gatekeeper messaging. Yet, it would also be a mistake to brush it off as trivial or unimportant. Poilievre's attack reflects a lousy situation for the few hundred firms that can be deemed both economically and politically important in Canada, the lens through which Ottawa sees corporate Canada. These are uncertain times for Canadian businesses. Their customers are cutting back on spending under the weight of higher interest rates. The economy is eking out some growth, but just barely. We're lagging behind the U.S. business investment is falling and capital is fleeing. The policy environment is precarious. Poilievre's hockey glove face wash isn't exactly what some investors would consider constructive criticism at a time like this. Daniel Tisch, president of the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, offered up his rebuttal in a Toronto Star op-ed this week. What Poilievre describes as sucking up to the government is business leaders needing to work with government, no matter who is in government. To be sure, whether or not Poilievre's thesis is fair can be a matter of debate. But that's not really the point. The point is that the Conservative leader wants corporate Canada to know that he won't be attending any of their pity parties, especially if they continue to work with the governing Liberals. It's a power move that can come only with the air of inevitability that the current polls offer up to Poilievre. And the Conservative leader is asserting that power for two reasons. Politically, Poilievre wants to deny any successes to the Liberals on the economic front that come with the side benefit of validation from the business community. Second, and perhaps more important, Poilievre doesn't want to be saddled, any more than he has to, with a growing stockpile of Liberal policy initiatives he'll want to reverse. This is not just a hypothetical concern. For example, Canada's big oil sands producers are currently in negotiation with the federal government on a financial backstop for a major carbon capture project in Alberta that could cost billions to the Canadian taxpayer should Poilievre or anyone else decide to pause or reverse Trudeau's carbon pricing regime. This puts corporate Canada in a squeeze. Companies have a duty to work with the government in power but know full well that many of these policies may not last long after the next election. And Poilievre has let them know he's keeping score. For corporate Canada, the prospect of waiting another year for an election is a bleak one.
That was a commentary by Theo Argyrides. He is the managing director at Compass Rose Group. You can find the full text of his article on our website, thehub.ca.
Hi, Hub Podcast listener. Fun fact to share with you. Well, not really. This year, most major newspapers in Canada will join the CBC and fund the majority of their journalists' salaries through one form of government-coordinated subsidy or another. Here at The Hub, we think this is bad for journalism and bad for news consumers like you. This is why The Hub is not availing itself of these government subsidies. But producing high-quality, independent news and analysis is expensive and time-consuming. This is why we are asking you now to become a Hub subscriber for as little as 25 cents a day. Get all kinds of great benefits, including subscriber-only analysis of the economy and politics, podcast content, and so much more, all with the knowledge that your support makes our independent journalism possible. Join at thehub.ca.
Our second essay is by Mike Moffat and Kara Stern, writing on why the dream of homeownership is dying and how it can be revived.
If you want a well-functioning economy, people must have hope that hard work will lead to success. But in Canada, people are giving up. A recent poll by Abacus found that a full 74% of Canadians believe housing affordability gets worse for first-time homebuyers in 2024, and that 57% of non-homeowners are either pretty pessimistic or have given up hope entirely of ever being able to buy a home. That's up from 48% since September 2023. Locking young people out of homeownership is bad for the political fortunes of incumbent governments and bad for the economy. It is also a threat to the social stability of Canada, according to a recent RCMP report. Therefore, all orders of governments need to restore the dream of homeownership to millennials and Generation Z while creating abundant options for renters. Additional housing supply for both owners and renters is necessary, but building new supply will take time. Governments cannot force people to feel good about the measures taken to increase housing supply if they're living in unsuitable spaces, with only the promise that supply may restore affordability in a decade or more. Canadians need solutions now, so the government needs to find ways to get existing homes into the hands of first-time homebuyers. We believe it's possible to attack the demand side of the equation to get first-time homebuyers into homes sooner. This goal can be accomplished through a three-part plan of scaling back international student enrollment, creating incentives for investors to return single-family homes to the ownership market, and making it easier for first-time homebuyers to qualify for mortgages. The key is that all of these reforms must be implemented together for it to have an effect. The only immediate way to increase homeownership for younger families is to make it easier for them to buy homes that already exist or are about to be completed. In Ontario alone, there are nearly 700,000 single-detached, semi-detached, and row homes that are not occupied by their owners but are serving some other purpose. While homes being left unoccupied or turned into short-term rentals receive a great deal of attention, the majority of these investor-owned homes are being used as long-term rentals, often for university and college students. With the international student boom, entire neighborhoods are getting converted into student rentals. These conversions reduce the number of homes available for families but also cause inefficient use of existing infrastructure. It leaves local elementary schools underused because these neighborhoods then lack children. International students and other non-permanent residents add to the social, cultural, and economic fabric of Canada. However, for them to thrive, they must have adequate housing. Canada's international students and temporary foreign workers programs need to be scaled back even more until Canada's non-permanent resident population returns to pre-pandemic levels. The scale of the international student program in particular should be tied to the construction of on-campus or near-campus housing. This could help prevent the loss of single-family neighborhoods in our cities. Governments should then create incentives for the current owners of those student rentals to return them to the market to be used as homes for actual families. A time-limited and temporary reduction in capital gains tax or provincial land transfer taxes when selling a secondary property could act as such an incentive. For example, the capital gains inclusion rate could be lowered for any single-family home or condo unit purchased before January 1, 2024, so long as that unit is sold to a buyer using it as a primary residence, and the sale is completed between July 1, 2024, and July 1, 2027. This measure would incentivize investors to return those units to the ownership market. Over the longer term, the tax system should be designed to disincentivize investors from buying up existing single-family homes and instead incentivizing them to provide capital only to new home construction. While having investors sell their portfolio of single-family homes will increase the supply of homes available for purchase and put downward pressure on prices, it will still likely not be enough to allow first-time buyers to purchase these homes. Last year, home sales dropped by 11% due in part to high prices and interest rates, causing first-time home buyers and young families to be unable to qualify for a mortgage at all. The drop in sales can be addressed by recognizing that the current rules could be better designed for younger home buyers. For example, the current 25-year amortization rule helps ensure home buyers will not still be paying off their mortgages when they are in their 80s or 90s. However, these rules do not take into account the age of the buyer and treat a 50-year-old and a 30-year-old the same. Because younger buyers have more time left in their working careers, they should be allowed to choose longer amortizations if they wish. A 35-year-old buyer with a 30-year amortization would still have their mortgage paid off before retirement. The federal government could create an amortization length of 30 years, but only for first-time homebuyers of primary residences. Ideally, this would only apply if one of the buyers is under 40 years old. It could even introduce 35-year amortizations for buyers under age 35. The reform would allow more young families to qualify for a mortgage and give an advantage to first-time homebuyers when they are competing with investors and older buyers for a home. Finally, the current stress test rules are not particularly well designed for young professionals. The stress test is an important tool to ensure that home buyers can continue making payments if interest rates go up or if economic circumstances change. However, the current test may be excessive for young professionals, who are likely to be earning more 5 years from now than they are today. Canada should consider reducing the stress test rate from 200 basis points to 50 basis points, but only for first-time home buyers of primary residences, or for buyers under 40, who choose a fixed-rate mortgage of 5 years or more. As with the amortization changes, it would allow more families to qualify for a mortgage while giving an advantage to families over investors. It is critical that these ideas be implemented together. Policies designed to increase homeownership that do not take into account the rental market risk, displacing renters. A program in the Netherlands that banned investor ownership of some housing types did manage to increase first-time ownership. But it also led to increases in rents, as lower-income renters were displaced by middle-income families. It left more renters chasing fewer rental properties. A plan to scale back international student enrollment until sufficient on-campus and near-campus housing can be built would help minimize this effect, ensuring rents do not skyrocket as rental housing is converted into ownership housing. Governments cannot afford to wait for new supply to come onto the market to address the dying dream of homeownership in this country. Canadians cannot afford to wait that long. Demand-side policies must be a part of every government's toolbox in 2024.
That was a commentary by Mike Moffat and Kara Stern. They are co-hosts of the podcast titled The Missing Middle, where they discuss the topics that have led to a declining middle class and how to reverse that trend. That's it for today's edition of Hub Headlines. We hope you enjoyed the program. To receive all our best commentary and analysis each morning by email, subscribe to The Hub for as little as 25 cents a day. You can do that right now at thehub.ca. Hub Headlines is produced by Alicia Rao. Thanks for listening.